America's daring, highly trained special mission force. Its purpose? To defend human freedom against the Cobra, a ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
Hello, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Couch Potato Theater here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Couch Potato Theater is the podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network dedicated to covering all those hidden gems, cult classics, and guilty pleasures that are just so good, even though you might have that Criterion Collection or Deluxe Blu-ray set in your library just mere inches away from your entertainment center. You love what you are watching so much, you don't even care about getting off that couch. And that, my friends, is the definition of what our show is all about. I'm Davis Grayson, your host of Couch Potato Theater. And tonight, here at the Fandom Podcast Network, we are proud to celebrate a special presentation of a movie that means a whole lot to me. And it's, I cannot believe it, it is 30 years old. That's right, we are doing the 1987 animated G.I. Joe the movie. Not only are we going to do a retrospective of the movie, but we're also going to do an audio commentary. But with me tonight is two very special friends. I'm talking about none other than Kevin Reitzel, the founder of the Fandom Podcast Network and co-host of Blood of Kings. Kevin, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. I should say, too, I'm actually the co-founder. You know, Kyle would kind of go, wait, well, what's going on?
Oh, yeah.
Co-founder of Fandom Podcast Network and the co-host of Blood of Kings with my buddy Norman, our Highlander podcast. Good to be with you here, man. And also good to be back and talking G.I. Joe.
I know. How long has it been since we've seen each other? You know,
a whole month. Right? It's yeah, crazy. Celebration, right?
I know. So not only is Kevin joining me to talk about the G.I. Joe, the movie, but we're also joined by a fellow G.I. Joe enthusiast and prolific writer. I'm talking about none other than Andrew E.C. Gaska. Drew, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Very good, guys. How are you?
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Cool. So just for people who don't know, I'm the creative director of Blam Ventures, a studio that basically creates original content or gets licensed content to create awesome books for. I've written some novels for Planet of the Apes. I've written graphic novels for Space 1999. And I have a whole bunch of cool stuff coming soon that I can't really speak about at the moment. I'm also a franchise consultant for Fox on Aliens and Planet of the Apes. And my studio is moving to Florida, and we are having a GoFundMe thing go on right now. You can check it out on my Facebook page, which is, you just look up Andrew E.C. Gaska, and you'll find me there. And that's all I got to say about myself right now.
I think you're in good hands going to Florida. I know some good guys down there.
Yeah.
Where are you located right now?
I'm in New York, Brooklyn. Okay. So.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, we're expanding a lot of stuff, and I need to have a less expensive life, I guess. New York is just way over the top of costs, and I think I need to get out of the cold. So
there is nothing wrong with that, and you're moving to the peninsula side. I mean, not the peninsula, the panhandle side of Florida, aren't you?
Yeah, Pensacola is likely where I'm going to end up. I'm actually headed down there to take a look for sure next week. But that's the goal, and it's right on the Gulf, and it looks pretty cool to me.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Well, before we get started with this retrospective, let's tell the listeners where we can find the Fandom Podcast Network, and that is none other than iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play. Facebook, you can find us at the Fandom Podcast Network. Email, fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Also find us at Twitter, @FandomPodNetwork. Kevin, where can they find you on Twitter and Instagram?
You can find me at Spartan_Phoenix.
And you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter is at Davis Grayson, and Instagram is Springer underscore 2017. And Drew, where can we find you at on social media?
On Facebook, it's facebook.com/AndrewECGaska. Twitter is at AndrewECGaska. The Instagram is blam.adventures. And my LinkedIn is AECGaska.
All right. Well, that sounds like a plan. So, gentlemen, G.I. Joe the movie, 1987. Where were y'all during this time?
Who goes first?
Kevin, you can go first.
Okay. Now, I was just talking to you before we got on camera. Even though this did not get a theatrical release, I swear I saw it in the theater. Now, I grew up in Southern California.
I thought it did get a theatrical release.
Well, it was supposed to, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but it didn't get an official one like Transformers did. But okay. I think it did get a limited one in Southern California, which is where I'm from. And Southern California down in L.A. and all that kind of area, they get some stuff that other places don't. And I swear I saw it because I remember being really excited about it. But I want to say it was limited release. But, of course, I do remember seeing it when it was aired on TV. I just don't remember what time it was. But they did repeat it more than once.
Drew, how about you?
I actually never saw it completely until this week. I did not even realize I'd never seen it. I watched the TV show when I was a kid, repeatedly. And I had seen the opening sequence a billion times, and then I'm watching this movie and I'm like, okay, I know I've seen the scene with Duke's quote death end quote, and I know I've seen these other scenes, but I'd never actually seen the whole movie at once. So yeah, in 1987, I was 15 years old. So I was clearly doing something else.
Wow. That's cool. We got like new perspective on this. I love it. This is cool. At 1987, were you born in 70?
72.
Yeah, okay. I was born in 70. So, yeah, I remember I was enjoying my G.I. Joes in secret while I was like going to middle school and high school. I wasn't telling people I like G.I. Joe.
Well, I know with me, it was a Sunday afternoon after church. My mom had saw it on like a TV guide or TV listing saying that G.I. Joe was going to have a movie on. Did you want to watch it? And I watched it a Sunday afternoon, and I was 12 at the time. And Kevin said, I was very careful about who I told that I liked G.I. Joe or collected any of the figures because I was ridiculed and made fun of. So, you know, yep. Isn't it funny now looking back how things are so much different? So
we rule the world now.
It's crazy, isn't it? So
I had stopped collecting the toys when I was 14. But okay. I stayed with the comics, almost through the end. And additionally, whenever there was a Snake Eyes figure, I would buy a Snake Eyes figure because I just could not have Snake Eyes.
Right. So. Oh, yes, absolutely. So this movie was created at the height of the craze in 1980. And it was supposed to be followed by, it was intended as a theatrical release to be closely followed by Transformers the movie. However, the unexpected production delays, which allowed the Transformers feature to be first. And we all know about the Optimus Prime dying, and then Duke was supposed to die, and then that caused a huge uproar with everything else. And then just to the poor box office performances of Transformers the movie and My Little Pony the movie. So which one of y'all saw My Little Pony the movie during this time?
Yeah, I did not. I was like Drew. I was buying the comics, Snake Eyes is one of my favorite characters too. But My Little Pony, that was not in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny how that was the trilogy of movies that was supposed to be released. You know, Transformers, G.I. Joe, and My Little Pony. Huh, funny. Could probably all have been in the same universe, right? So,
well, wouldn't be surprised if they're going to be.
Yeah, I know. So Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 43%, which, all right, that's interesting.
So, not bad.
Yeah, I know. So the plot description of this, if no one has seen this movie yet, is when Globulus, which is voiced by Burgess Meredith, and Cobra plot to eliminate mankind and repopulate the world with a vicious race of ancient reptilians, it's up to Duke and company to prevent them from acquiring the technology that will enable them to do so in this feature-length adventure based on the classic cartoon series. I mean, how cool is that? Just that little bit of an opening right there.
Well, Burgess to me is always, I've always remember him from playing the Penguin in the original Batman series. And I didn't really know it was his voice at the time. My radar on who was doing voices in cartoons was nothing. I was more about who was playing actors and stuff like that. But I had mixed thoughts on the plot, you know, watching this film for the first time. But I'll go into that a little bit later. What about you?
How about you, Drew?
I'm sorry. Okay, so yeah, sorry. I was eating peanuts. basically, the plot to me is a lot cooler than I thought it was going to be because, I mean, okay, as a fan of the comics, that was real G.I. Joe to me. And then the cartoon, because I started reading the comics in 1982 when it all started. And when the TV show came out 3 years later, I was like, what is this? These are not the characters I know. Everything was, you know, I hate to use the word, but a little bit more silly. It was a cartoon fantasy world as opposed to the comic, which was tried to be rooted in reality. Watching the film now, I have an appreciation for what the plot of this film was because it ties into the reptilian conspiracy that a lot of UFO people are talking about. I don't know if you're aware of that.
No.
Allegedly, there are reptiles who live under the earth who evolved from dinosaurs or something, and they have they control our society. And if you trace back the royal heritages of families, they all have reptilian blood in them, like the monarchies of all kingdoms and everything. So yeah, this is one of those crazy tinfoil hat conspiracies, and this G.I. Joe movie just like lives in it.
Well, it seems to there was a theme in the 80s of bad reptilians. I mean, I've just finally watched V, so there you go.
Oh, yeah. V is fantastic.
But I just want to comment on something you said. It's funny because I enjoyed the comics more story-wise because they were more based in reality. But to me, I still was able to enjoy the TV series, even though it was a little more cartoony. I was able to separate the two and enjoy them for most. But the stories in the comics were much more entertaining.
And yeah, I totally agree with y'all on both of that. I enjoy the comics, plus I enjoyed the cartoon as well because it was really funny how the comics actually focused on certain characters and the cartoon would focus on different characters altogether.
Yeah.
Basically, Larry Hama was building a universe that was just grounded in reality and dealing with Vietnam and his experiences there. And I mean, the best way to illustrate the difference between these two universes is that Cobra Commander is a reptile man or Cobra Commander is a used car salesman. It's this night and day. It's interesting that G.I. Joe can exist as these two different things completely and still have huge fandoms for both.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's good.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this. The director was Don Jurek, who was best known for directing 85 episodes of G.I. Joe TV series, including Revenge of Cobra. Do y'all remember that one? That miniseries?
Yep. Oh, yeah. The miniseries. Well, there's the original one with, like, you know, getting the elements, you know,
for the mass and then there device. Was
mass yeah device. The mass device yeah. And then the Revenge of Cobra. But it's I gotta throw out one thing though. My favorite miniseries though is the Pyramids of Darkness. I love that series, and I could watch that as a full movie all together because when you can finally get a break dancing Snake Eyes, that's entertainment.
You can't go wrong with that, can you?
Silly, I know, but I still love it.
And you know what's really funny? The Mass Device, which was released a few years back in comic in three video packs, And the last part, which was the beam emitter, never was released in high production. So everyone
an incomplete
has,
mass device. No.
Yeah.
Where was that piece? Like in the show, where was that piece? Was that at the ocean floor or the jungle or where was it located?
I'm trying to remember now. I don't
know. It was the elements that you had to get, but right. He's talking about the pieces of the mass device.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm confused. The Weather Dominator is the one that broke up into a million pieces. That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The Weather Dominator. That was a cool
one. You're saying that one piece for the mass device was in a low print run and much harder to get.
Yes. Cause it was in a 3-pack. I think it was Alpine and
Quick Kick
and one other person that was actually released in this set. It comes with a DVD as well, because the first three sets was like pretty easy to come about, but my mass device does not have the beam emitter. I could never find it, unfortunately.
You didn't go through secondary channels?
Oh, well, I didn't want to spend that much on it. I know some of our friends in the G.I. Joe discussion group has one. And they look absolutely gorgeous, but I'm like going, maybe in June I might be able to find it, but who knows?
There you go.
I got lucky enough to, I had ordered a case of them from Big Bad Toy Store, so I was able to get it that way.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. And, you know, when all else fails, BigBadToyStore.com is the people to go to with stuff like that. So, you know, since this was an animated movie of a great TV show, let's look at some of the cast and crew that was in G.I. Joe, the movie. So who was some of your favorite voices? Drew, let's start with you.
I love Burgess Meredith. He didn't sound anything like Burgess Meredith unless you like listened really carefully. He sounded like much more like a massive guy. And I don't know if they tweaked his voice or if he was just able to grumble himself that way, but it was great. And I really like Pythona's voice. Don Johnson's doesn't sit right with me.
You're totally right. Because I was a diehard Miami Vice fan. Mm-hmm. And his character kind of rubs you the wrong way. And sorry to interrupt you, Drew, but you're right on.
No, the character Falcon is a complete jerk as it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, Don Johnson just sounded cranky. Where's my paycheck for this?
Kevin, how about you?
Okay, I could go into the obvious ones. I agree with Drew about Pythona. I love the voice. I love, you know, Cobra Commander, Zartan. I had trouble understanding Sergeant Slaughter anytime he spoke, but I want to give a shout out to one of the characters that I completely forgot about. And I'm really curious about. I would love to see someone do a cosplay of this guy is Big Lob, voiced by Brad Sanders. And apparently he was the guy that, was able to, in that training sequence with Beachhead, was able to, get through it with the help of Tunnel Rat.
Yeah.
And I just thought he was really funny. And apparently he finally did get some love and he got a figure made like in 2015 or something like that. Do you know anything about this, Davis?
So 2010, there was a Big Lob figure released.
It was 10. Okay.
In the O-ring version, which was a repaint of Mercer from the Renegade line.
Okay.
The head is from Mercer, Renegade. Body was from someone else, right? The head was Mercer? Or was the whole thing?
The head was Mercer, but I can't remember now. I'll have to go back and look. Oh, no, because it had the 14 shirt, so it was a different body.
Yeah.
I don't know, remember who. But this year, for the G.I. Joe Collectors Convention, they are releasing an updated modern era Big Lob figure. And this year also at the G.I. Joe Convention, Brad Sanders is going to be at the convention.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that is so cool.
So
that's awesome.
I'm excited to be able to see him.
Does anyone know why they spent so much time in this movie on a character that they were not going to make a figure for?
You know, that's the really weird thing about it, because if you look,
Referring to Big Lob?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Because Big Lob was never made, neither was Pythona.
Well, I know why they wouldn't make Pythona, because any time you read anything that was going on with Hasbro then, they would always shoot down a new female character.
Cool. Yeah. I got a question for you guys. Was Falcon in anything else?
I don't think so, actually.
That's the question. Why is Falcon in this movie? Why did they create a character just to bring in a big name like Don Johnson, who was very popular at the time with Miami Vice, hoping to get that crowd into this? Because
He was a figure. He was a figure already.
Right.
But I don't think was he even in the comic book?
I don't know if he was in the comic book. My understanding is that when the cartoon series went to Dick, he actually was in that series, but he became addicted to drugs, if I remember correctly. And it was about the headhunters and Gristle and everyone. But what's really funny is this introduction of 1987, the figures, you had Chuckles, you had a Law and Order, you had Jinx, you had Tunnel Rat, and Lieutenant Falcon.
And what's funny is Chuckles doesn't say a word in this film. but he has one of the coolest scenes where he picks the missile off the side of the tank instead of firing it and throws it at the target.
I question this man's sanity, because then he rides on top of a helicopter right beneath the blades.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, do not ride there on the Tomahawk. I'm sure it says no step there. That means no lay down either.
That is true. But, and why would they pick a brand new character known as Big Lob? And he's not even mentioned in here because there were so many other characters that was not even released this year, but was never given screen time. Such as like Sneak Peek, Fast Draw, Crazy Legs, Croc Master, Crystal Ball, Big Boa. So,
I mean, it could have been a diversity thing.
Could have,
but then
see what characters fans gravitated towards, and to see where they would go from there. So, I mean, I remember walking away going, I really like Jinx. I thought Jinx was really cool.
Yeah, I thought Jinx was actually one of the cooler female figures that they actually had.
I really liked her in the comic book, her connection to Storm Shadow.
And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's about his kind of Hollywood style, but I've always been a big fan of Quick Kick.
you know who actually voiced Quick Kick?
It's Francis Chow. Is that right? Who it is?
Yeah, he was also the doctor in Lost.
Oh, okay. And it looks like he's also been in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2: Secret of the Ooze. Okay.
Yeah, it was. What was that? What was the name of that project? On Lost.
Oh right, yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, okay.
Like he's
done a lot of work though. He's a busy actor, but yeah, I liked his work as Quick Kick though.
I mean, I if you look at some of the other voice actors, you have Michael Bell, who was Duke, of course, Blowtorch, Lift Ticket. Then you have Peter Cullen, who was actually in the movie as Nemesis Enforcer. And then one of my favorites who actually got to meet a few years back was Hank Garrett, who actually voiced as a dial tone.
Did I miss Major Blood somewhere in here?
Was he even in the movie?
I don't think so. He's in the opening credits.
Yeah.
that action scene, which had, by the way, great opening song.
The Cobra song is great. But no, the claw he's flying gets blown up, but then I don't think we see him fall towards the earth, but then we don't see him. So maybe Major Blood died there.
They were nah, I think he survived.
He had to have a parachute.
I saw no parachute.
But it definitely seems like they are trying to focus on some new characters, give some extra life to these other ones and stuff. So it was kind of interesting. But yeah, the casting of Don Johnson, I question. And I can see why, because he was huge at this time. Miami Vice was blown up.
Apparently, Falcon was in the comics starting with issue 60. Clearly, he didn't do anything memorable, though.
Yeah, yeah, I'm having trouble. I stayed with the comic for a long time, and I barely remember that.
Yeah, and then with the voice actors, you have to also remember Chris Latta as well, who was the voice of Cobra Commander.
Yeah.
You know, your favorite scene, once a man, you know. So from with the trivia, if we look at before we get to the trivia, one of the writing consultants was Buzz Dixon. And if you know Buzz from anywhere, he did a ton of different, he was a writer for a ton of different cartoon series going through, and he was also the story consultant for the 1987 movie, and he did the commentary on the new Blu-ray version of the movie.
Oh, and he was writer for Thundar the Barbarian. Nice.
Did he write Gem as well?
You know what? I'm looking right now. Chippendale Rescue Rangers. Gem, yes, he did for two episodes.
Okay, because Gem, I must confess, I really enjoy Gem.
I may have seen a few episodes. Just a saying. A few years ago,
my girlfriend decided she wanted to watch it all, and I was like, this is amazing. This is better than the G.I. Joe cartoon.
Well, it's always so funny. It's because if you look, I don't know if he was the one that actually created the character or if he helped in creating the character of Hector Ramirez. But Hector Ramirez, who was the newscaster for 20 Questions, he was in G.I. Joe, Transformers, Inhumanoids, and Jim and the Holograms.
Was he in Mask too? Was he in Mask as well?
No, because that was done by Kenner.
Okay, gotcha.
So that was a different level.
Yeah, he was like the Agent Coulson of all those series. He popped up in all of them.
You know, that's one figure I wish the Collectors Club would actually have made as a freebie, you know.
The Costume Club would love someone to try and pull that guy off, because that would be awesome.
This is Hector Ramirez, and you're listening to 20 Questions. So, well, very, very cool. So, Kevin, you just mentioned it, the opening of the movie. What was your first reaction to the opening?
Oh, I thought it was great. The lyrics and the imagery behind it, and just this epic battle going on, and the Statue of Liberty, and it reminded me of the original or the regular 30-minute cartoon, but it was a little more theatrical and was meant to be. And I'll be honest, I would love to see those guys go to JoeCon. I would love to hear a story about how you see them playing in concert, playing these songs. Because you know, we would be singing all to that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Drew, how about you? Since you have just recently watched it, what did you think?
The animation is fantastic. There's so much going on in it. I question the logic of Cobra's plan there, though. I mean, you're flying in with this giant helicarrier, and your plan is to blow up the Statue of Liberty. So instead of just firing some missiles at it, you parachute everybody in. Your commander then puts himself at risk with a bomb that's already set to explode while it's inside the helicarrier. It just seems like, did anybody think about this plan? Because Cobra Commander should be in the, you know, he should be on the bridge of the helicarrier and just say fire, and that should be the end of it.
It's so funny you say that, because when I was playing with my G.I. Joes, I'd made my own little G.I. Joe bases out of cardboard, and I actually made a little cardboard bomb with a little dial on it and stuff, and I would do funny little stuff like that as well, like planning it and then trying to return it back to Cobra Commander and stuff. It was pretty funny.
One of the figure packs came with that bomb for Cobra Commander. It came with Cobra Commander on the claw with the bomb, came with Duke in his cartoon colors, and it came with the camera that that gets smashed by the Crimson Guard in the opening. Mm-hmm.
By the way, Neil Ross does the voice for Hector Ramirez, Shipwreck, Buzzer, and Monkey Wrench.
Okay.
That's always fun right there. So I'll tell you my very first remembering seeing that opening, I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was just one of the coolest scenes to see. It really got me pumped to watch this movie. Looking back now, looking at it as a little bit older, I looked and my first thought was, did the G.I. Joe team already know they were going to attack and they were waiting and this was all a setup?
This is what I was going to say also, because if that's true, if what you've just said is true, why did they wait until civilians were in danger to jump out of the Statue of Liberty, which is way too big in this thing also. I mean, they should have, if they knew it was going to happen when that helicarrier is coming across the bay or whatever, is when they should have attacked it, not when, you know, they're on top of the statue already.
That,
so fail. Fail.
Or seeing all of a sudden those Skyhawks rising up from what looked like the river, I was going, were they all just sitting there at that time? What's going on with that?
There's no logic to it. It just looks cool.
Yeah, it is probably the coolest opening that you'll ever see. So with like a lot of other movies, there's always a little bit of goofs that always happens in the movie. Did anyone ever detect any like slight goof or slight, oh, was that a certain error that shouldn't have been done? Kevin, let's start with you.
Well, I kind of cheated and saw the notes in IMDb. I think they, and I didn't notice this because I'm a horrible speller myself, but it is kind of funny. Apparently they misspelled barracks on the G.I. Joe base.
That's crazy.
But you know, when it comes to goofs and stuff like that, when it comes to these type of shows, I'm not that picky about it because, especially since I was paying special close attention to it when I was rewatching this recently because of the let's not kill Duke now because of what happened to Optimus Prime and we don't want to make those same kids cry.
Yeah. But
them kind of rewriting around it because when Duke gets hit with that Cobra spear, snake spear from Serpentor, what is the first thing that Falcon does? He pulls it right out of him, which you're not supposed to do. and you can totally tell his character's dying there, you know, with the way that they're acting, and then they added the line like, you know, oh, he's going into a coma he's gonna be okay. You know,
the line sounds like it was added later. It doesn't even sound the same sound quality, and it's from someone that's off camera.
But you know what? I didn't catch that at the time when I saw this. And so it didn't matter at the time, you know.
What about you, Drew?
The one that was driving me crazy when watching it the other day is that they're all in their cell in Cobra Law, and Snake Eyes in his cell has his grenades and his sword on his uniform.
So you're going to take a ninja and put him in jail, but let's leave the grenades and swords, the things that he's probably really good at.
Yeah. And Quick Kick had his shuriken on his costume as well. But the thing is, I'm just thinking, okay, it's just, it was a mistake. The animators put the wrong model there or something. But no, the minute they get out of the cell, Snake Eyes is running out of the cell and he pulls the sword out as he's running out. So I was like, oh my God, no.
Well, the only thing I could back up with that is just saying that since the figures had already like their shuriken or the grenades already on their body and you couldn't actually remove them, that's one thing you could actually say, well, they're trying to be like the toy line. That's what I'm guessing.
The sword?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's kind of reaching it. But the one thing that actually caught me, and actually it was after a couple of times watching it, was at the very end when the entire G.I. Joe team is running for their life, who makes an appearance none other than Steeler and Grunt. And if you look very carefully, as per Worlds Without End, they were left behind in the Cobra alternate controlled universe. So did they actually make it back and leave Clutch behind? Or what is the story to that?
Is there a Kindle World story that explains that?
You know what? I'm thinking about writing one. I think I'm going to do that.
I was just going to say, if there isn't, I'm doing it.
Yeah. Bridge the gap. Bridge the gap.
I think we need, you know, let's talk about that later.
You want to collaborate?
Yeah, let's do it, you know.
All right.
So, you know, the last thing we could talk about is merchandise. And we've already talked a good deal about it, but merchandise was at the time when, in the 80s, where you could find Duke or Scarlet or any one of those figures at any moment. If you go into a Target, Walmart, or anyone and say, hey, I want to get this. Unlike today where that is not the case. What about you, Drew? Did you have any trouble finding any of the merchandise?
Well, see, it was a different world. Not only was there everything everywhere, but you never knew what was out. You know, there was no internet to tell you what's coming out. The only way you knew was what was on the back of the figure cards. And if there were sometimes figures that were blacked out, so you couldn't see who they were.
Yep.
So, and also, like, for me, most of the time, it was ordering stuff out of the Sears catalog.
Oh, yeah.
So like, if it wasn't in the Sears catalog, I didn't know it existed, you know? Yeah, so it's a weird situation. It's like, you know, I remember going to the toy store when Joe first came out. I was only buying Star Wars back then. And I remember looking at these figures, and I wasn't very much into military stuff. But Snake Eyes and Scarlet and the Cobra Soldier really caught my eye. And I convinced my mom to buy them for me because they weren't very military looking. But she refused to buy any of the Joes. Then I was buying the comics secretly for myself. And then when issue 4 came out, we were going on vacation somewhere. And my mom said, go grab some comics so you can read them in the car. And I slipped an issue of G.I. Joe in there thinking that she was going to find it and be like, nope. And she bought it for me without realizing what she had done. And then she was like all upset that I was into military. And she was crying that I was going to join the military and leave her alone. And I laughed and said, I have no desire to join the military. I just want to play with military figures. And after that, she was buying me G.I. Joe. So my memory of the toys on the shelves was just always constantly. There were the original 13, you know, including their vehicles. And then sporadically finding things like you'd come to the store and like, who the heck is Tomax and Samot? You know, why are they here? Must have them now, without knowing that these things existed already. So, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Kevin, how about you?
You know, it's funny. Drew's right. You looked at the back of the figures and that told you what was coming out. Also, we were teased in G.I. Joe comic books as well and other related comic books. They would tease some stuff or maybe a promotional thing mail away. But, or you would see the commercials during the cartoons, which is another reason why I love the cartoons, because you would see those. But you would actually probably see them in the other cartoons as well that were backing up. Like you might see them in He-Man or something like that. But, those original ones, and then the mail-away ones are really cool, too, because I always saved my flag points, and I would mail away for those. But the ones that I gravitated towards obviously were Snake Eyes, but I loved Shipwreck because of the cartoon series that helped me like the figure more, cause I didn't see as much Shipwreck as I wanted to in the comic book. Then I loved Major Blood and I got my Major Blood fix in the comic book, which was great. And then I loved Tomax and Zaymont just cause I thought those figures looked really cool. And there was a mail away, I remember there was a mail away Cobra Commander. And then there was the mail away, what was it? The hang glider, not the hang glider. I'm sorry. What was it? One with the surfboard and this.
Oh, the Manta.
The Manta. Yes. Yeah. The Manta. But you know, when it came to the vehicles, I remember getting the Ram and the Vamp. And then I remember sharing this on our last year during our G.I. Joe retrospective or look back. My parents' cable went down because of the little prongs on the back of the TV. It was one of those old ones where you had to like screw in the right thing for like the UHF and VHS thing. And they thought there was something wrong. And I kind of looked at it and kind of fixed it and made it work. My dad was so happy. He took me to go toy shopping and he bought me the Mobat. And I was really excited because I got Steeler and, you know, I got to make it run with the D batteries underneath it and stuff like that. So, but I couldn't get all of the vehicles that I wanted.
That's cool though. I mean, I absolutely love saving all the flag points because later on, I don't know if y'all remember this or not, they actually had where you could go and get some figures that were not in the stores anymore. Like you can get like the Killer Whale for so many flag points or the APC or the So many different like little vehicle drivers or anything that you don't normally see on the market anymore. And you're like, oh, this is cool. I want to get this, you know, and order that off. And, you know, I have to say probably one of my favorite figures is Blowtorch. My dad got him for me and it was at a Kmart. I never forget this. And he bought him for me after I got back from my grandparents' house. And it was probably one of the coolest figures.
Oh, he was a bright one too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So
were you happy when Hasbro started releasing a billion blowtorches a few years ago?
You know, I have to say when they started releasing the yellow and red one, I said, okay, that's cool. But I loved the green and yellow one, that version. That was probably one of the coolest versions.
I like Tripwire too, because he had the little mines in the backpack that you could pull out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He was extremely cool, that one. And Snowjob, of course, you know, you can't go wrong with him. So, all right, gentlemen. So, personal reflections on what you see about this movie now. Would you recommend it to, you know, your friends, family, cohorts? Does it stand up in your personal collection? Kevin, let's go with you.
My first impression when I saw it years ago, and I know I saw it in the theater. I'm almost positive, but I did catch it on TV and then VHS later on. When it came to the story, though, it wasn't my favorite. Like I said, I enjoyed the original G.I. Joe miniseries a lot more. It was a little more well-rounded, and the whole kind of Cobra monster stuff and the whole reptile thing got a little too corny for me at the time. But looking back on it, though, I'm a lot more forgiving of it, and I still enjoy it for a lot of reasons where I like the animation and the introduction of some of the characters. I'm still not sold on Falcon. Can't stand the guy. Sorry. but Big Lob, I've become the new Big Lob fan. I want to see more from this guy. He just cracked me up. It was fun to see Tunnel Rat too, and Jinx and some of these other characters. And being from someone who's part of the G.I. Joe Finest Costuming Group, I was going insane watching this, going, why am I not seeing more of this? I want to do that. I want to do this, you know. But I'm a completist. I have it in my library, and I'll be honest, I have not watched this in years, even though I had the DVD sitting on my shelf for years collecting dust. But I've watched Pyramid of Darkness multiple times, because that, I don't know what it is about that. There's just so many silly things in that miniseries that I love. It's so campy that when it comes to like movies or miniseries, that's the one I always tell people that I like, and that's the one that I go to. But this one does hold a special place in G.I. Joe history when it comes to character introductions. The music intro is fantastic. I would love to hire those musicians and redo that and play that live.
Fun for this podcast.
Yeah, I know, right? and so, you know, there's certain things about it that I look back on, and I forgot how cool Pythona was, and I love her voice as well. So that's where it stands with me.
Drew, how about you?
So for me, the movie has always been the major splitting off point from what I liked about G.I. Joe. To make the cartoon just be, nope, this is different. and again, this was without me actually seeing the whole movie through until recently. But like when Globulus, or however you say his name, did I say it right? No, right?
Globulus.
Globulus, yeah, I always say Globulus. Globulus. When he and Nemesis Enforcer and the Royal Guard guy, when they got their three-pack, I saw that in the store and I was like, what the heck is this? Why is this guy Joe? Why does this guy have a snake body? This makes no sense. And Larry Hama pretty much said the same thing and refused to put them in the comic.
That's why I love Larry.
I mean, seriously, he's just like, nope, not going to happen. You know, Hasbro had some really weird ideas that they wanted to do back then. They wanted to make the Dreadnoughts were supposed to be these evil teddy bear things because of the success of Ewoks. You know, it's a lot of weird stuff that Larry was like, this is not going in my comics, so don't do it. and Hasbro intended to, like, have Cobra like become Cobra La, be the main enemy, and have all these organic, like I've seen designs for a motorcycle, which was like a bug. It's based on the Tron cycle, but an organic version of it. And they were going to go into the spiral that is all this whole bizarre thing, which is going to take it away from its military roots and put it more into super science fiction. And obviously, eventually, it does that. The toy line does dive deep into science fiction anyway. But so as far as I'm concerned, it's like it just. Watching the movie for the first for the full time that's all folks for the first time in full, I really enjoyed the whole reptilian plot because that conspiracy stuff is so crazy to me. But ultimately, what it comes down to is that this is just not my G.I. Joe.
I can understand that. I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was good. I would have thought it'd been better if they may have done Cobra La as an alien society that was stranded here on Earth or whatnot, which could have been a great precursor to the I'll probably butcher the name, but the Lutanix Empire, which eventually becomes Star Brigade. I think that would have been great.
Did those guys ever show up in the Deke cartoon or anything, or no?
No, I never saw them. I mean, unless it was in the very last little bit of the Deke cartoons, but I don't think the Star Brigade ever showed up. I don't even think a lot of the... I know Battle Force 2000 never showed up.
Right. Right. Well, that was another thing that just came and went.
Yeah, unfortunately. So
I didn't even realize until recently, if you look at the packaging, the Iron Grenadiers, they were supposed to be the enemy of Battle Force 2000.
I know. How crazy is that?
Yeah, they proved to be incredibly popular, and Battle Force 2000 was a footnote. So, yeah.
And that is a sad thing, so who knows. So, gentlemen, I would like to thank y'all both for working with us tonight and talking about this G.I. Joe retrospective, but also I'd like for everyone to check out what's happening in the Phantom Podcast Network. We have our Culture Class, which is our weekly fandom show, Couch Potato Theater, which we recently did Tron. Drew and I and Brandon, Shea Matella, actually went over Planet of the Apes, and we're actually going to be covering a movie commentary of the original Planet of the Apes with Charlton Heston very, very soon. So we actually are going to be doing the Time Warp, the 1987 TV movies. If you know from last year, we did the 1986 movies. Kevin is going to be spearheading that for us. 30 years later, we're going to be talking about some great movies. Kevin, do you want to share that?
Oh, yeah. We were challenged by a friend of the show, Aaron Gill, when we were doing 86, talking about, well, you know, 87 had a lot of good films as well. You know, we had Lethal Weapon. Of course, we had, you know, obviously G.I. Joe came out. We had, was it The Running Man? And, gosh, Predator. What's that?
Predator.
Yeah, Predator, RoboCop, just so many good stuff came out. And, it was a Three Men and a Baby, which I think was the biggest draw money-wise. That came out. Witches of Eastwick. Just a lot of really good movies that influenced a lot of us that are doing the show, and as well as many other fans. So we're going to do that in a four-part series. And we're also going to look back on the pop culture of 87 as well, let you know what's going on with entertainment, with TV, music, current events at the time, and some toys.
Awesome. And then we have Blood of Kings, which is celebrating their 1 year anniversary, which Kevin is also one of the co-hosts of that.
Yeah, our Highlander podcast, Norm and I are just about to approach our 1 year anniversary. We did a 1 year anniversary recording with Kyle, our fellow Fandom Podcast Network co-founder, and Mike Sellers, who is our editor, as well as a contributor to our show. He does some guesting sometimes, and big fan of Highlander as well. And we talked about the entire year and our highlights and what some of our favorite episodes were.
And also joining us is one of our newest podcasting shows, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with Tom Caldwell, Brandon Shea Mutala, and Chris High, which they're going to be talking about that specific genre of Alfred Hitchcock. So I'm excited to actually hear what they actually are going to be talking about. I've heard the first three episodes, and I want to know a little bit more. So in last week, we have, what's that?
You guys have a lot going on.
I know. Crazy, isn't it? And then we also have the End Zone, which has not turned into the ESPN the Ocho yet, because Kevin and Kyle are still on good speaking terms. So that's one good thing.
That's right. We did our off-season special. We cover sports here as well, football, because we're big football fans. And a lot of stuff happened, if you're a football fan, recently with the draft and, of course, the schedule being released.
Awesome. So thank you for joining us here on the Phantom Podcast Network and Couch Potatoes special presentation of G.I. Joe the movie. Join us next time for the audio commentary. Kevin, Drew, thank you for joining us tonight. And now you know our retrospective, and knowing is half the battle.